Today is August 24th, 2016, and this is episode number 374, The Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief at TMO.
And I'm Adam Christensen, private second class, Norwegian Army, 1st Penguin Brigade. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Dude, you are so much better at reading that than me. Oh, man, we should fire me and hire you.
I don't know about that.
Adam Christensen, of course, is the world-famous podcaster of MacCast fame. He also does some back-end work for us, and every once in a while he is kind enough to sit in for us here at the ACM, sometimes at TDO too, right?
I do think, being half-Norwegian, I am going to join the Norwegian Penguin Brigade.
Is there a Norwegian Penguin Brigade?
I'm riffing on a story that came out this week. So in Scotland, in Edinburgh, there apparently is a zoo. And at that zoo, there is a penguin. Apparently, they have a relationship between Norway and the Edinburgh Zoo related to penguins. And any time that officials come from over there to visit, they bestow a new title upon the penguin. And he was made a brigadier in the Norwegian Army today. So.
Huh.
He's also been knighted as well, and I think is an advisor to the King of Norway or something like that.
Well, that would explain some things, wouldn't it?
Anyway, that's right. Stole my title.
Yeah. Here's the weird thing, and I had to check on this before I started spouting off. Penguins are native to the southern hemisphere, specifically the southern tip of. Southern tip of South America and
right.
Antarctica. So,
correct.
What the heck does Norway have to do with penguins?
I think they have zoos and they have penguins. That's all. I think there's a penguin exchange relationship between the two zoos. I didn't read the full story, to be honest. I just thought it was funny that he was given a commanding post in the Norwegian Army.
Huh.
But by the way, brigadier. I don't know if that's commanding, but he's a brigadier.
We are off to a solid start for ACM, by the way.
This
excellent. This is right on task for us. All right, so penguins, congratulations. Enjoy your post, and let's just start off with something completely goofy, and that was Samsung announcing this week that they were going to be, quote-unquote, sunsetting milk.
Sunsetting.
Milk.
It doesn't seem like the right term. Couldn't they have been more creative?
I had some suggestions. they're announcing that milk is spoiled, soured, it's curdled, it's turned.
So basically you're saying Samsung has become lactose intolerant.
No, actually Samsung is realizing that its readership is lactose
intolerant.
Its customer base is lactose intolerant. All right, here's the deal.
What is milk? Because I'm assuming they're not like getting rid of 2% or anything like that.
No, nothing like that. Milk is a streaming service. Streaming music service, and it was exclusive to Samsung devices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they rushed to market as the rumors were heating up that Apple was working on, some kind of Beats-based streaming service.
Right. I think one of your readers pointed out, too, it's not even something they rolled themselves. Is that right? It's kind of like a rebranded or a co-opted some other service?
Yes, but it is operated by, I mean, the Milk itself is Samsung exclusive.
Okay.
They're not actually handling the back. Here's the thing. I hate this.
Because they had to rush it out, right? I mean, this is the whole point, is they didn't build anything. They didn't do anything. They didn't make anything amazing. They just co-opted something else and branded it, slapped their brand on it, and called it theirs.
Worse, they did this because Apple was doing it, and and Samsung, like, they, this company drives me nuts. It's like, okay, Samsung has the worst case of Apple envy on the planet.
Uh-huh.
Which is weird, because they don't really even compete. I mean, Samsung is just a, you know, when in the smartphone market, Samsung makes devices that run other people's operating systems.
Right.
Right? You know, they're not really competing with Apple. They don't have a platform, but they think they do, or they want to think that they do. And they do this stuff where, you know, rumors are circulating that Apple is working on something, and Samsung thinks that the world will be fooled when it rushes some piece of crap solution to market that that's similar to what Apple is supposedly going to be doing, and it always is, you know, it's like they need to wait and see what Apple does to actually copy Apple if they're going to try to. It's just so weird, man. It's so weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to add to that, because it's confounding and has been for a long time, because that's their MO.
That is their MO. Yeah, it's their MO.
Yeah. Over and over again, and then they, you know, want to turn around and bash Apple for a lot of the things that they do too in their commercials, which is always so funny.
Well, and then of course the foundation of all this is that Samsung has a long and documented history of ripping off its betters and getting sued, losing, and then, you know, just basically delaying payment until it doesn't matter. You know, they chased Philips out of the out of a particular. Oh, I have roof construction going on my building, by the way. And apparently,
I thought you were just banging on the desk, so you could probably just leverage and use that.
Oh yes, right. I'm furious. That. Bang bang. I'm furious. I don't know, man. Samsung drives me nuts, and they have like this delusion of platform, sticking things like S Health and S Voice and S whatever on top of Android, like mimicking Android services.
And Android Pay.
Samsung Pay.
Or Samsung Pay. Samsung Pay rather.
I mean, like, listen, guys, you're nothing. You're nothing but a hardware maker. You make hardware that runs other people's software. You're not doing anything. You're not relevant.
I mean, some of the hardware is actually decent.
But that's you know, if that we're being still fair, doesn't make right? Samsung relevant. It is. Right. It is. Some of it is semi-decent. But it still doesn't make them relevant. They're not. You take Samsung out of the picture, and the rest of the Android world would rush in and fill the void.
Sure.
Sales aren't going to go to Apple, right? They're not going to go to Microsoft or whatever Microsoft is doing these days. They're just going to go to other Android makers. HTC makes great hardware too. Does HTC matter? No, HTC doesn't matter. None of these Android hardware makers matter, because they're all just dumb hardware makers.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not, I mean, same thing could be said about PC manufacturers, right?
Yes,
I mean,
the same thing could be said about PC manufacturers. None of them matter, except for Apple and Microsoft and Google. Well,
and Microsoft, I guess they don't make PCs, right?
No, not yet.
I don't want to sound...
They make service, think. Service
They make tablets. Accessories, and they make tablets. And
but they're not making a PC.
They used to make phones. I don't know if they still do.
I'm not really sure where the status of Nokia is, to be honest, or the what used to be Nokia. Yeah, but I mean, the point is that Samsung is the largest by far of the Android makers. But if they went away tomorrow, no one would blink. People would buy, probably HTC would become the next biggest maker, but, you know, LG and Huawei and I don't know how to pronounce that, and Xiaomi would probably get some foothold here in the
outside Google,
of
right? China. Because Google makes Nexus.
Well, Google works with hardware makers
LG and
on its
Huawei. I never know how to pronounce that one.
Yeah, that's the one I was saying. I can't pronounce either. But I mean, Samsung, Google isn't making hardware.
Right,
they
right.
work with hardware makers to make a branded device. And quite frankly, that's more. If I was going to get an Android device, I'd more than likely get a Nexus device.
Right,
you know, it's going to be supported. I'm going to be able to get updates, and I can run naked Android without the
without all the overlay crud.
Yeah, right, without the crud.
The crapware, as we used to call it when we had PC, you know, when in the PC world, in the Windows world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's exactly what we called it, right?
Yeah, it's shovelware, crapware, whatever you want to call it. Stuff that got paid to, you know, they got paid to put on there.
You know, when we started recording, I didn't have any construction going on.
Again, I would just use the ambiance.
Well, yeah, but the ambiance sounds like there's construction going on. That's the problem. All right, be that as it may,
the listeners will be forgiving.
Probably, hopefully, we can all live in hope. Anyway, yeah, Samsung, they annoy me. This stuff annoys me. I am a high maintenance princess.
I can't argue with any of this.
Anyway, so they're shutting down milk, and I just, you know, I have a line.
No one's going to care.
I have a heading in my piece that actually came from John Keith, the Devil's Advocate. And that line is no company. Oh, golly, I got to quote him right now. See, failure couldn't happen to a more deserving company. Totally straight from John Keith, and I completely agree with that notion. And good riddance to milk. Well, I'd even forgotten that it existed.
So, I mean, but there is kind of a. I know this isn't directly related to milk shutting down. I don't believe that it is. But, you know, there is the whole thing of Apple Music making quite a dent very, very quickly. And it does have other companies sort of reacting in certain ways. And I'm kind of thinking there was a small story this week about, you know, Pandora making some changes. And then there was also, I think, a story just today that Universal, the CEO or something, came out and said that none of their record labels that they represent are going to be allowed to do exclusive streaming media deals anymore.
Yes.
Right.
But hold up, because before we go off on that angle there, I want to make a point between Apple Music and milk. Apple Music may be having an effect on Pandora, and it may be having an effect on Spotify. As a matter of fact, it may be having an effect on any streaming service that is cross-platform, or at the very least, any streaming platform that works on iOS.
Sure.
Milk never worked on iOS.
Right.
Apple Music has had no impact on Milk by definition, because Milk was exclusive to the, you know, people out there that are buying Samsung devices. Not exclusive to Android.
Samsung. Yeah,
exclusive to Samsung. This is that delusions of relevance. They have the delusions that they have a platform. Right? So Apple Music had no effect on Milk. Milk's failure was all about the fact that Samsung does not have a platform at all, and that no one cares about Samsung, and that Samsung's devices are just Samsung. They're just Android devices.
Right.
And I'm tense about this, by the way. High maintenance princess. Mostly pedantic and high maintenance princess. So, but this other thing is a separate story, and it's definitely an interesting development. And I know that we have some contrary thoughts on this, and
right,
as you were saying, Universal told its, so, like, I think they've got 80 different labels that are part of the Universal group,
right? Universal, including group. The most interesting one is including Cash Money, which signed a big deal with Apple.
Well,
for all kinds of exclusives also, and stuff like that. So I kind of felt like this is a little bit probably reactionary to that deal being done.
Yeah, and it also includes Interscope, a label that was run by Apple executive Jimmy Iovine.
Right.
For what that's worth. But yeah, and what Universal told its member labels was you can no longer do exclusive deals with any streaming service provider. And Apple wasn't the only one doing these exclusive deals. Spotify was doing it. Tidal was doing it.
Sure.
And Apple was doing it. And they were all pursuing these things aggressively because the big artists having their content available exclusively on one streaming service or another would bring people to those services. That's the idea, at least.
Well, and it's also lucrative for the artist.
It's very lucrative to the artist.
Yeah.
And that was during when we were talking about this in the morning meeting today. That was your angle there, was that artists aren't going to be happy about it.
Well, not only that, but I mean, I think if you read the whole piece, and I should have probably sourced it, and I don't have my notes in front of me, but at the very end of it, I think it was a Telegraph.
We don't let that stop us here, by the way.
It was a Telegraph article, anyway. But, you know, sort of at the very end, they pointed out that, you know, it's just going to be artists that are going to more likely just go do these deals and not bother with the label moving forward. And I've always maintained since Apple started getting involved with music and Apple Music that in the long term, not in the short term, because they need the record labels right now and they need, you know, the content, but as a longer term play, that part of Apple's strategy in my mind was going to be to take music and make it work more like their app store model, where they have a platform, they have an audience, they have some marketing mechanisms, and you would put your content onto Apple Music, and then they would take a small cut, and then you would get the rest. So, you know, the standard 30% would be what I would think they would go with. But and this just seems to be going that way in my mind, moving more toward that goal. And it kind of felt like almost like we're at this tipping point because, you know, it used to just be iTunes when I was talking about this, but now we have Apple Music and they are doing all these exclusive deals and they are proving, at least for big artists, right? This doesn't shake up, you know, everybody kind of at the lower tiers, but at the top levels for the big artists, again, it's very lucrative. And with more music moving towards streaming and away from even digital download, you know, they're looking for opportunities to generate more revenue. And so Universal coming out and blocking that, I think, is only going to piss off more artists and get them to go, well, forget it. You know, my contract's up. I'm just going to go straight with Apple or with Spotify or Tidal, any one of these companies. And they can even play them off of each other to get the best deal that's most lucrative for them. So,
and I see where you're coming from, but Apple very expressly has a history of not working directly with artists or mm-hmm. authors on the publishing side. Like Apple does deal with individual developers,
right.
But Apple has said very specifically that it doesn't want to have a jillion different agreements with a jillion different publishers or authors or artists, and that it independent bands that aren't on a label, generally speaking, have to go through a service like TuneCore. It's one of the biggest ones that serves as a sort of clearinghouse to get on all of the various services that are out there,
or CD Baby or
CD
any
Baby
one of
is
these,
another right? one. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think we're only talking about the Apple doing exclusive deals with maybe top tier artists, and other artists are going to have to go through some sort of clearinghouse. But is it going to be what we think of as traditionally as a record label? I don't know. You know, I think it is going to be more like a CD Baby, and that probably is not a great experience for those artists.
Well, no, it's not. And don't forget that labels are providing a service.
Sure.
I mean, they're providing financing to get your stuff recorded. And recording, especially if you're a big artist, recording has not gotten cheaper. Recording at the independent label has improved dramatically, right? The what musicians can do out of their bedrooms or in their practice space or the garage, whatever. What they can do today is amazing compared to what they could do 5, 10, let alone 20 years ago.
Sure, yeah.
But recording in the big leagues, paying a big-time producer, hiring musicians, hiring songwriters, which a lot of the big artists do, those things still require a lot of cash. And what one of the things that the record labels are bringing to the party is the ability to manage that process and finance that process in exchange for an eventual cut of the proceeds.
Well,
and that's
and
not
going
to go away.
And, no, it's not going to go away.
And as wealthy as someone like Frank Ocean may be, there's wealthy and then there's the wealthy where you can actually truly finance what you're going to do next.
Sure. Sure. But I mean, we're already seeing and hearing about Apple also taking on that role a little bit again for some of these top tier artists in these exclusives. They've produced music videos for people. They're starting to produce original content. And how far a stretch is it to say that they would put the bill? But I mean, they wouldn't start to foot the bill for producing some albums for artists who are willing to sign exclusive deals.
No way. No way Apple is getting into that business. No way. There's no way.
Even with Jimmy Iovine sitting in there running things?
It's too messy. It's too messy. Apple wants to be involved in these things at a very high level, not getting involved in the muck. Not only that, but Apple's
been working for
years.
We're not talking about Apple directly, right? We're talking about Apple Music, which is really almost a separate company.
There's no way Apple wants to be the producer for all music. No way. And not only that, but Apple has been working for years to prop up, subsidize, keep running, keep from disrupting the traditional music market. Why would they have been doing that all this time for the express purpose of booting them out of the picture at some point?
I do think that was the plan all along. I do. I mean, that's what Apple does, is they come in and disrupt industries and change things where things are broken. And I think the relationships between artists and labels has been degrading and broken for a long time, especially as they've transitioned from, you know, doing physical media into digital.
But there's a difference between disrupting the distribution and sales side and disrupting the production side. It's too messy. There's just no way that Apple wants to get involved in that. None.
Yeah.
So I win?
I think we'll see.
Right.
You know,
well, definitely.
You know, I think they are going to be doing some producing for artists that they try to lure for exclusives. That would not surprise me. I'm not saying they're going to do it at a large scale or at a large level. I don't think they're ultimately going to replace all record labels. But again, if I was a big label with a big tier artist, I'd start to get worried about this. And, you know, and Frank Ocean, he is out of his contract, and he did I think this latest album was self-produced, from what I read.
I'm not an expert on Frank Ocean.
I think that was in the UK piece or the Telegraph piece, and I will find it. I will double check it as we're talking here, but I want to say that was even pointed out in this. That he just finished up his last requirement for Universal.
He rejects labels and boxes, but I think that's not referring to record labels. I'm looking for some information here.
Yep. So it does say his Blonde was self-released by Ocean.
Okay.
And the visual album Endless fulfilled his last contractual obligation to Def Jam and Universal.
All right. I hear you there. He's the exception. The massive exception. He's the massive exception that proves the rule. I mean, you know, again, producing someone like, okay, let's take someone like Taylor Swift. If Taylor Swift wanted to fire her record label, or, mm-hmm. you know, like once she reached the end of a contract, not renew it, she could, because she probably could. I'm not an expert in Taylor Swift's finances, but this woman has maniacally managed her business. She is in control. She knows what she's doing. She knows where all the money is. She is absolutely the picture perfect example of a music machine, with apologies mm-hmm. to the 1960s group, The Music Machine, which was awesome. She is also an exception that proves the rule. Someone like Kanye West is like much closer to the norm, where his finances are in a mess, and you know, and he's just bouncing around from one catastrophe to another. I mean, you know, most artists don't have the funds to do a big budget recording on entirely on their own terms.
Right.
And I don't see that changing. And but more specifically, I really don't think Apple wants to get involved in that side of the business. I don't.
I see what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I think they are going to get a little more involved than they are today. How deep they go and how far they go, I don't know. But I mean, they're already doing a little bit of it. Like I said, they're producing music videos. They're producing original. I know they're doing video stuff now. I don't see it being that big of a stretch.
What movie, music video did Apple produce?
They used an in-house team to produce the video for Drake. At least the video for Drake. I think they did a couple others.
Apple used an in-house team for that. Drake, yep. Drake used an Apple in-house team for his video, for his music video.
Energy, I think, was the video.
Interesting. All right, well, I didn't know that.
I think that was what it was called.
Because, like, the Taylor Swift thing was essentially purchased from a production house. The Vice videos that Apple was running exclusively on Apple Music were produced by Vice, and Apple bought them. Right? So most of the content, most of the video content that has been exclusive to most of the video content and all of the music that has been exclusive to Apple Music has all been acquired from third-party labels/studios/production houses, with the exception of this Drake thing, which I didn't know anything about.
Yeah. That was the story, that it was produced in-house by Apple.
And of course, Apple is producing this. To your point, and not to my point, Apple is producing the TV show,
the new app thing,
the app thing, and the show that Dr. Dre is
Planet doing of this, the Apps,
Planet of the Apps, and then the scripted show.
And what's their role in this new Cash Money documentary?
That I don't know.
So I know they released a trailer for that, and it's supposedly part. It's a lot of people believe it's part of the deal, the exclusive deal that Apple did with Cash Money. But I don't know what their involvement with the actual documentary is.
Cash Money, it's a documentary. There's a trailer for it. The Cash Money story before anything.
Yep.
It's an Apple Music exclusive. This is all according to Engadget. Minute-long clip suggests that the feature won't pull too many punches, just because label founders Birdman and Slim are executive producers. It illustrates an early life punctuated by a mix of runaway success and tragedy. And there you have it. And it is being called Apple's Cash Money. Well, I don't know, man. There may be something to what you're saying. It seems to me that Apple would be more interested in producing original video content than it would be in becoming a producer for artist recordings, music, you know, albums.
I think Jimmy Iovine is a factor in there, and you know, he's got those relationships with the artists. He's done that kind of work before. He's in at Apple Music. I don't know what his official role is. If he's still kind of an advisor, if he actually has an official title. Is he even an Apple Music employee?
I think he answers to Tim or maybe Eddie. Eddie Cube.
Right.
So I think he has a specific role. I don't know if he has a specific title. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. And it's also there was another point that you made during our meeting, which was that artists have been complaining that they're not making any money from streaming from anyone, you know, from right. Apple, from Pandora, from Spotify, whatever. The way what money there is, the way it flows, does not go to the artist as directly as some of the money does for music sales. And you had noted that the idea that they would that the artists would be prohibited from doing these deals with Apple or Spotify or anyone else. Title would was going to really make some artists tense because it's a potential additional revenue stream for them,
right?
Not to mention, of course, the big boost they get. You know, Apple was responsible for three number one albums from that were exclusive to iTunes and Apple Music. And Apple had the first number 10 album that was streaming only. That was an exclusive from Chance the Rapper.
Right.
And that kind of... That's happening in part because Apple has the audience. But Apple is also promoting this exclusive content to that audience.
Absolutely.
So the artists are not only making money from whatever kind of agreement they have for the exclusive deal, they're also making money simply because Apple is promoting it as part of that deal. That's part of the whole package. And so Universal taking that away, it's interesting that that Universal would do this. I'm not really sure why Universal thinks it's in its best interest to limit these deals or to cut them off.
Yeah, I mean, it probably has. My only thought was it must have something to do with how those 80 labels are fit within however that business model works, and that you know the cash isn't flowing uphill. That's the only thing I could think of. Ooh, the cash on those deals is not flowing in the direction that Universal would want it to flow.
You know, from that standpoint, this could end up. This could be a negotiating tactic on the part of the suits at the very top.
Yeah,
they announced that there's going to be they announced a moratorium on this stuff in order to get their member labels to cut them in on the action.
Yeah, I don't know. That was my only thought on the motivation for it. Yeah, exactly. I don't know the music industry at all, but I mean, if you apply rational thought to it, it seems plausible.
Yeah, you definitely don't know the music industry.
Exactly. That's the problem, right?
Interesting.
All right.
Very, very interesting. Well, we're gonna see where that goes. I mean, you know, Apple Music has made a big splash. Apple Music seems to have caught the footing that Apple's previous streaming efforts didn't. And Apple Music seems to be bridging that transition from iTunes sales to streaming revenues rather nicely so far. I think you can call Apple Music a raging success.
Yeah, I mean, and there's still numbers that show that even though more and more stuff is moving towards streaming exclusively, Apple is still selling a lot of music as well and actually doing a better job now that they have, or selling more music, I think, now that they have the streaming on there as well. So download sales are still they got a little bump. You know, they didn't go up or anything, but it, I think it got a little bit better when they started doing Apple Music. And that's another reason why I think artists are sort of interested in, and labels are interested in Apple Music, because that's something that their streaming competitors don't really have, with the exception of maybe Amazon, although I don't fully understand how Amazon's whole streaming works. But, you know, you look at Tidal or Spotify, they're not, you don't have that extra revenue. So if I am an Apple Music subscriber and I discover something I really like and I go, you know what, I want to own that, it's very easy for me to do on Apple Music. Whereas, you know, that's, again, additional potential additional revenue for an artist and a label that is appealing.
Yeah, imagine how much easier that could be, by the way, if the interfaces were actually merged. Right, because right now, buying an album that's listed on iTunes for download for sale is completely separate from the album that's listed on Apple Music for streaming. So imagine if like you actually had a buy button next to the stream button on Apple Music. A crazy thought, I realize. Crazy thought.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, let's see here. Why don't we move on to this other thing that we had, which is the unprecedented access that Apple has been giving to journalists.
Yeah, a number of publications.
What do we have? We have Fast Company,
Washington Post,
and now who is Stephen Levy writing for? That's it. Back Channel,
and they've also been talking to Bloomberg.
Yeah, they've been talking, and it is truly unprecedented.
Like, really, these really kind of big, in-depth articles with executives and executive team members.
Yeah, where they're talking about things like strategy, and they're talking about direction, and this new one from Stephen Levy that came out today. Was it today or yesterday? Was it today, right?
I think it was today.
Yeah, it was today. It's called the iBrain is here. This is like Apple pulling back the curtains on AI. Not only pulling back the curtains, but actually showing Stephen Levy all of the things that Apple has not previously acknowledged. Right, and giving him a port. They sat down. He describes this in the piece, sitting down with Eddie Q, Craig Federighi, and two senior Siri scientists, and they hand them a portfolio that includes all of the places where Apple is putting machine learning, neural nets, and other forms of AI directly to work. I mean, who is this company? Because these are not things that Apple does.
Yeah, they're becoming much more open with several areas of the company. And I think in one of the interviews, I want to say it was the Washington Post interview, Tim Cook kind of gets asked and talks about this and says, yeah, we're opening up this stuff, but you know, you're not going to see us opening up or talking about our hardware products. But they do seem to be opening up a little bit, and they're not that open on R&D. This one that you're pointing out was the first time I've seen them really be really open about potentially what's going on behind the scenes of R&D efforts, which almost directly relates to products. But, you know, they're opening up a little bit more about services. They're definitely totally open about their environmental and social initiatives. I think it's – and I talked about this in the early, early days, back in 2011, 2012, that – you know, Tim Cook was going to make Apple his version of Apple, and it was going to be very different from Steve Jobs' version of Apple. And I think that's just what this is.
Well, and I think there's a little bit more to it than even that, because of course, yes. Tim is going to make Apple his Apple. Now he said that, and it's funny too. He addressed this because in one of these interviews he did, the journalist actually said, you know, what about that thing you said about how Apple wasn't going to change? Right. And Tim Cook said, this was a couple of weeks ago, he did this interview, and Tim Cook said very specifically that what I was talking about is that our core values aren't going to change. because a lot of things have changed. And but here's what I think Apple is doing. I think that Tim Cook made the decision that Apple was going to become much more directly involved in shaping the narrative about Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve.
What was it?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there was always the theories that they did that very covertly in the past, right?
Well, Apple did it in part in the past by being silent, and then of course, you know, dazzling people with new products.
Yeah, and but then, I mean, even in our world too, there was always the rumors that Apple PR was very creative and very good about covertly controlling that narrative as well.
Well, yes. Again, using mainly the power of secrecy. And Steve Jobs was always, for decades, going back to before he left Apple in the 80s, he would grant access to himself in exchange for covers.
Right.
Magazine covers. Like, if you want to interview me for Time Magazine, you got to put me on the cover, and you have to put me on the cover, and one of my products has to be in the picture with me. Right? That was like one of the things that he did for a long time. And there was a very small group of journalists who ever got access to Apple. Stephen Levy, who did this AI piece, happens to be one of them.
Yeah, he was in that group.
And Brent Tetzley? I think I'm getting the right
name. I think that's correct, yeah.
Brent Schlender and Mr. Tetzley.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I can't remember.
Two of them.
Mr. Tetzley's first name. What's his first name? Brent Schlender. Rick Tetzley is his name. So, there was a small group of journalists who got this access. But I think what's happening right now is that Apple is in a state of transition.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Tim Cook he's talked about the value of the healthcare industry, $9 trillion a year industry. He's talked about the opportunities for Apple being a company that isn't motivated by and has no interest in being compensated by insurance companies for what they're doing. And they see that as an opportunity that can allow Apple products and services to enter people's lives on a scale that will dwarf the smartphone industry, is what he has said. He said that recently in an interview, another example of this unprecedented access. And, you know, we know about things like the car. You know, Tim Cook and Eddie Q have both talked about wanting to be involved in, like, our lives from when we wake up to when we go to sleep.
Right.
And all of these things are bigger than Macs, and they're potentially bigger than iPhones. The healthcare stuff in particular is bigger than iPhones. And yeah. It's while Apple continues to crank out new iPhones, and Apple is, and I know we have and Apple appears to be lengthening the life cycle of its Mac product lines.
I think of all of its current product lines. I mean, that's part of the transition that you're talking about.
Not iPhone. iPhone is still once a year, though.
Not yet, but I think we're on the cusp of that lengthening as well, personally. You may not agree with me, but I could see that moving to an 18-month cycle. We're hearing about a non S cycle happening, maybe with this next release. It'll probably still be a year apart, but after that, I could see it lengthen.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I guess it's possible. It seems weird to me.
Apple is transitioning from the hardware that they have now into something new, and we have all this wild speculation about what it is. I think you're right on the healthcare side of it. You know, that's going to be much more a services kind of thing. I think services are going to start to take a larger and larger role moving forward. And Apple's been kind of open about that. And then there's, you know, sort of what's next for for hardware.
Yeah, and Apple is. We know that Apple's doing stuff with AR and or VR.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Augmented reality and virtual reality, and of course, yeah, we know that Apple's working on a car, and all of these are rather large transitions, and in the vacuum created by the lack of new products,
right?
There is a narrative. There's always a narrative about Apple.
Analysts are freaking out. Let's just say what it is, right? Analysts and industry watchers are getting really nervous and saying a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and so is the mainstream press.
Right.
And once upon a time, I think that Apple would have been content to just, you know, let that happen. You know,
ignore it. Yeah, absolutely.
Say what you want to say. But again, I think so. Coming back to the thesis of this discussion, at least my thesis of this discussion, is that Tim Cook decided that Apple was going to be more involved in shaping that narrative. And I mean, and you could spin that in two ways. One way would be that, oh my God, we don't have any new products, so you know we better get to talking so that we can distract people from the lack of new products. That's the negative way to put it.
Sure.
But the other way to put it is, no, you don't understand. We're always working on new stuff. We've always been working on new stuff. We never talked about that stuff, but that didn't mean we weren't working on it. We're not talking about it now, but that doesn't mean we're not working on it. But now we actually are talking about it. And now we're going to actually show you that, yeah, we are kicking butt behind the scenes. We're doing all this stuff behind the scenes, and if you want to talk about us, talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, another part of this, and I mentioned this to you earlier, and I don't know that you necessarily agree with me on this one either, is you know, getting back to sort of Tim Cook and this being Tim Cook's version of Apple. I've always felt, since Tim Cook's been running the things, that he's much more sensitive to fluctuations in the stock price and more interested in sort of trying to control that a little bit. And he seems to react to things that are being said, especially by analysts and the financial community. And the examples I have of that are, like, you know, when Carl Icahn started saying you should do buybacks and you should do dividend payments. It didn't take very long before Apple started doing those sorts of things.
You know, I don't think it had anything to do with Icahn. I don't think it had anything.
I always felt
stuff,
it did.
I think that stuff was in the works before Icahn started spouting off. And Apple never did it quite to the way that Icahn wanted Apple to do it. I think that Apple just got to a point where it had so much money, more money than any company could do anything with, unless it was going to try to buy the planet.
Right.
And that it just got to a point where doing buybacks and dividends made sense. I really don't think that was about Icahn per se.
Yeah. There was an interesting, it was interesting in one of those interviews, I want to say it was the Fast Company one, where Tim Cook pointed out that, you know, since 2010, Apple is now, by revenue, a four times larger company.
Right.
Which is just, I can't, you step back from that, you go, in 6 years, a four times larger by revenue corporation that he's running.
But so, and it was already, you know, a big company.
It was already a huge company. Yeah. And,
right. Do you remember when people were saying, oh my goodness, you have $50 billion in the bank. You have 40. Right. It started when Apple started getting $30 and $40 billion in the bank. And people were saying, you have to do something with this money. This is crazy. There's no way Apple can keep growing. This is ridiculous, is what people would say.
Yeah. And so I think now that they've kind of gotten to this point where they're in this transitionary cycle between the current products and what's ever next, I think, you know, this concept of them needing to sort of control and almost triage the sort of down cycle so it doesn't, you know, super plummet, I think that is why we're starting to see them open up a little bit and see more of these articles and see them react in ways to remind people that we've gone through these cycles before. And we've always come out on top, and we're going to do it again.
Yeah, I agree with that.
you know. So I absolutely think that's part of it. Because I think we're still a few years out. I mean, there's going to be another year or two of this kind of thing. And it's not like they're posting bad numbers, but they're not posting the numbers that they were 2 years ago. And they're not going to be a year or two.
That's the deal. I mean, Apple is still making money hand over fist. It's just that money, for the very first time, first two quarters of first fiscal two quarters, actually the second and third fiscal quarter of Apple's, anyway, God, what am I saying? The first half of this year,
right.
Apple for the first time showed negative, first time in 13 years showed revenue and earnings declined year over year.
Yeah, and I'm saying that's going to continue. I mean, I think they're really prepping the community because that is going to continue for the next year or two, I think.
It could. Well, no, you know, Adam, I think that we've got a year of that. So this is sort of like still a very, very, myopic look at it. The
right.
big problem with the first half of 2016 was the incredible success of the iPhone.
Sure.
Once we're comparing to iPhone 6S, that we're going to see something better.
Right. I'm just trying to think of what new product are they going to have in the next year to 2 years that's going to turn that tide.
Well, this next iPhone could do better than the 6S did against the 6. So we'll see.
Agreed, but I don't think it's going to do as well as the 6 did.
I bet the 7 does as well as the 6.
The best-selling iPhone of all time.
Yeah, sure. Let's bet dinner on it.
I think that's
you're not a
betting
man,
bar.
But let's bet a dinner
all right.
on it.
All right, you're in.
I think the 7 will do as well as the 6, probably better.
And I don't. So this is easy. That's easy terms.
That's true. So we call it the first quarter? So the December quarter? First full quarter.
Sure.
All right. I like it.
You're on.
Plus, we'll have dinner together.
Yeah.
All right, so in the meanwhile, something is really screwed up on my end, and now I'm getting a huge delay. So let's take the opportunity to cut this short and cut out of here. What do you think?
I'm good. Yeah, let's
okay.
go for it.
All right, let's do it. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. With the delay in my head, and it makes it very, very difficult to actually speak. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thank you for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's all for this week.
Stay subscribed if you dare.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
That was
yes, that's how professional I am.